Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Constructive Criticism. I'm your host, Spencer, and I'm joined by my co-host, Casey.
Hey, what's up?
And Michael.
How's it going? Just a little nugget of wisdom. Grenade me once, shame on you. Grenade me twice, shame on me.
That is how we tested our mics today. We discussed the value of dating somebody who often has grenades thrown at them, and we came to the conclusion that you just probably shouldn't do that.
Yeah, it's ultra low is the value of that.
You know, the on the hierarchy of who you should date, I don't think men or women who have grenades thrown at them on a regular basis, you know, are very high on that.
Well, depends on how you rate excitement in your life.
But also, like, it shows that some percentage of people genuinely hate you.
Well,
on a very real level.
I was going to say, it also shows that some percentage of people feel strongly about you. So, you know, if living a dull life is
sure.
Your
yeah.
true
All publicity
nightmare.
Is good publicity.
And you know who I feel strongly about and who will never throw a grenade at you is Oasis Games. You can check them out at OasisGamesSLC.com. You can buy Goblin Grenade there. That's a thing you could do.
It's not quite the same.
Yeah. And I guess if you ask real nicely and you're like in the store, they might throw that at you.
Dave might.
Right, if somebody asked you to throw a goblin grenade at them, you wouldn't do it?
I might throw it at them out of, you know, in a fit of rage, but unlikely that...
Here's the thing. Is if they get a paper cut or something, there's
liability issues.
Huge liability issues, yeah.
Well, you can get 15% off of your first order of goblin grenades by going to OasisGamesLC.com using the code CCMTG at checkout. You can get 5% off of all your goblin grenades by using the code WouldThatBeGood.
Or anything else.
Yeah, right? Technically. Technically, it doesn't have to be Goblin Grenades.
But
it could be Goblin War Marshals. It can be Goblin Games. Goblin.
Goblin Chieftains.
Offensive, yeah.
Not guides, actually.
No?
No, you can get guides. I'm just kidding.
Goblin Recruiters.
It could be the one code specifically. I wonder if Hero of Bladehold is excluded from this discount.
Oh, man. I should make it excluded.
Yeah. So you still get a discount, but it's only 13% off? It's like just enough to make you feel a little bit worse about the purchase, but like we still want you to get a good deal.
I didn't know that you knew my hatred of that card so much.
I don't know. You've talked about that card a number of times.
I hate it. I just think it's unfun. Why does it have 4 toughness? I don't understand.
Doesn't it have a lightning bolt, stupid?
It doesn't have a lightning bolt or abrupt decay. That's a thing.
It doesn't die to anything. I traded Doomblade once, and the guy took out a lighter and lit my Doomblade on fire and called the judge and said I didn't have one.
How'd that go over?
Not well for him.
Yeah, that seems like...
Destroyed my magic card.
I mean, it seems like it went well for him.
You know, if you are in the market for, instead of buying lighters to light people's cards on fire, you could donate that money to our Patreon page by going to patreon.com/ccmtg. Why is that funny to you?
Is that a goal?
You're just like... You're just on them today. It's just good. You're doing good work.
Is that a goal on the Patreon page that, like, at a certain point, we'll buy lighters and light Hero of Bladeholds on fire?
It can be. You know, we can make robot dinosaurs happen. We can do anything.
It's true.
Basically anything that you see fit. This podcast is, like, so relaxed because it's, like, it's basically a holiday. Today was technically my Christmas. I celebrated Christmas with my in-laws today, so So I'm in the Christmas spirit, kind of laid back. But if you want to hear some more laid back shows, such as our monthly Patreon only episode where we kind of talk about what we would play and why and go really in depth into each format and what we're thinking about it, just go to patreon.com/ccmtg. Starting at $1 a month, you can donate anything you see fit. We won't light your magic cards on fire and we won't throw goblin grenades at you. So, but we will, you know, keep making awesome
podcasts.
We won't
do that whether or not you donate for reference.
Well, TBD. TBD.
But let's go kind of on to like the first segment of the show. Every week we want to talk about hashtag always improving. We believe if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. And we always want to be doing what we can to be improving ourselves. We kind of want to practice what we preach, right? It'd be really kind of annoying to hear somebody get up, you know, and do this podcast on like, you have to be better at this, this, and this. But I don't have to do that. I mean, which is funny because all the time we say, do as I say, not as I do, you know, on this podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, until we wised up and stopped admitting that we don't do this stuff.
Which I just shamefully prod back. But no, I think it's really important to look inward, and doing this every week gives me a chance to do that. This week, I did a lot of different stuff. The biggest thing that I did actually is giving a chance to a deck that has been doing well online recently. which on this podcast I called the worst deck I've ever played. And that's the Larger Than Life. What is the Pummeler?
Electrostatic Pummeler.
Yeah. So I played that on stream this week. And I played it some more, and I still think it might be the worst deck I've ever played. But it's certainly fun to pummel people.
So how many times did you get to say boom? Because I feel like your, you know, boom percentage with that deck
is
higher,
higher than your average boom deck. so the problem is that it goes, I was
your
streaming,
bust percentage
and,
is really high too.
We did come up with every time I cast Larger Than Life, I have to play Larger Than Life by the Backstreet Boys in the background.
Oh, very good.
Yeah, so that's, you know, that's one reason to play the deck.
It sounds like good old fashioned fun.
Yeah, but honestly, all jokes aside, I do think that the deck is better than I thought it was. It still could be the worst deck I've ever played, but it also could not be. Like, I think that I think that there are definitely games that you can have and sideboarding decisions that you can make to make that not so. So, for example, I wasn't playing Virtus Gearhulk at the PPTQ that I played the deck at.
Sure.
And Danny Cathro was, and he was right, and it's actually become, like, very widespread adopted technology in that deck out of the board, and, you know, with some extra lands and, like, Tireless Trackers, and overall, I think that's a good sideboard plan, and I'm more impressed with the deck now that I have it.
Sure. Board into, like, a deck or, like, playable Magic cards.
Yeah, exactly.
To fine-tune your deck a little bit.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, the unplayable part of the deck is really good against Aetherworks Marvel, would be my guess. Like,
exactly.
I've played a lot of Aetherworks Marvel. Like, a lot more Aetherworks Marvel than really anyone ever should, because it's kind of a miserable Magic experience at times. But, yeah, I mean, the card Electrostatic Pummeler is like, I hope you don't have pump spells. Too bad you're playing, like, 25 of them.
Right. I'm sure this will be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. Playing Marvel, actually, like, it's one of the things that made me hesitant about playing Marvel is the fact that you could get pummeled, where I feel like you could never lose a game to that deck with any other deck. So I was like, it made me nervous, but obviously, you know, it was a very small percentage of the metagame, and it was fine.
Yeah, well, the secret is, you know, every time you play it, getting turn 4 Emrakul pre-board and then turn 4 Ulamog post-board. It worked out really well for me. I'd recommend you try that in the future if you're struggling with that matchup.
Yeah, that's fair. Or, like, you know, they mulligan to 4 a lot, so, like...
What about you, guys? Either of you have some awesome Always Improving moments, Michael?
I don't know. I was kind of, like, running into a wall, trying to play as much Legacy as possible, just because I was unfamiliar enough with the format that, like, just figuring out what makes sense to be trying to do in different matchups. But I had, like, a really nice kind of revitalizing moment. I think it was Christmas Eve, technically, so it was like past midnight on the 23rd, so we were technically on the 24th, but I was playing at like 2:30 in the morning, playing like my third league in a row or something. It was just like really sort of starting to get frustrated, and I played against Eric Severson and Ben Friedman back to back. It was just like motivating in the sense that it sort of validated the fact that I was trying to do this to myself.
Yeah, like, you're not in this alone kind of thing?
Well, like, the people who are much better than me are, like, also think a way to get better at this game is to, when you can't sleep, just grind these endlessly.
Sure.
So, it was kind of nice. I felt better about things in general after that.
Cool. Casey, but what about you?
For me, because I've been traveling and very busy during the holiday week, trying to not let that time go to waste. I've just been trying to consume a lot of Magic and specifically Legacy content to get caught up and get a pulse to where other people are in the format,
sure.
Not just where my friends and I are, which was good.
So when you want to consume that kind of content, like, do you have a place that you go to? Do you have, like, what do you do to get that?
So first I'll check Channel Fireball and then Star City, just because, you know, it's kind of the cream of the crop. The best content is usually going to show up on one of those two websites. And then from there, I might check, like, TCG Player if I caught a link to it or something. I heard that there was a good article there. But beyond that, I go and I look for streams that are testing decks that are relevant to my interests.
Okay.
And then beyond that, just search for YouTube videos.
Cool.
People playing the decks.
So every week on the show, we invite the patrons of the show to also, you know, have questions for the hashtag always improvement segment to help them be hashtag always improving. Go ahead, Casey.
How do you feel about playing the better deck that you know less well compared to the worst deck you know better?
Awesome. So, Michael, why don't you start? Give your thoughts on this.
So, I would say that these are not, like, binary yes-no questions, but they're sort of sliding scale questions, right? Like, how much better is the deck that you know less well than the deck that you don't know well, or than the deck that you know better? And how much worse are you going to be at playing it? Like, it's hard to just answer that in, like, a...
I think that's a really good answer.
It's hard to answer in, like, a you should always do it this way. What I would say, basically, is if you're at the point where you know a deck so well that you know it's bad, and you, like, know, you just know the matchups and know you can't realistically win the event you're playing with, unless a decent finish has value to you, I would play the deck you know worse and try to play it as well as possible.
Yeah, so Owen Turtenwald was on Limited Resources this week, and he actually talked about this in Constructed when he was asked a question like, what is the biggest mistake that Magic players make that they don't know that they're making? And he said that he realized this a little while ago, that he caught himself saying, I know Birthing Pod is the best deck in Modern, but I'm not good enough to play it, so I'm not going to play it. And then he thought to himself, why? Why do I say, if I can't play Birthing Pod correctly, who can?
But I don't think you have to be Owen, right? I mean,
no, but that's, like, kind of my point is, like, he not only does he feel that way, but also he feels like everyone does this.
Yes.
It's like, okay, you know this other deck is better, and you're saying, well, I don't know it well enough. Well, I think that we oftentimes think it's going to take longer to get good with the deck than it actually is. And we use that as a crutch or as an excuse to not learn the deck, and because we don't really want to play it.
So I think it just depends, right? Like, if you think the deck is a lot better than what you're playing right now, you know, what percentage do you have to be able to play the deck at for it to be a better choice, right? I mean, it depends a lot on, like, how good the... If we're talking about, like, two tier one decks, but you think one is positioned slightly better, I'd play the one you're good at, because you're going to get a lot more mileage out of,
right,
you know, being able to actually play competently.
Yeah, but if you're, if you've been playing... This is something that... I think happens a lot in Modern. If you've been playing a deck for a while that's just not good, but you know it very well, you know your matchups very well, and you tend to pick up wins with it, then it's easy to say, oh, you know, I know this deck well. But if you have the opportunity to switch to just a better, more powerful deck that will do more of the winning for you and get that same level of expertise with it, that way you can, you know, boost. That's going to be the easiest way to boost your winning percentage in the long haul.
Well, and if you have any time to practice at all, you'd be surprised at how quickly you can at least, like,
exactly.
If you load Sling Upon Magic Online and play two or three leagues with it, which I mean is like a time commitment, but it's something you can do.
It's like 3 to 4 hours max, though.
Right. So, I mean, obviously, if you have a tournament that starts in 20 minutes and someone hands you a deck and says whatever, maybe you roll with it, maybe you don't. But if you have a little bit of time, I think... You can at least get the sort of stupid mistakes out of the way quickly, where you'll say, oh man, I can't believe I did that. That was, you know, I lost this game solely because I'm an idiot.
Yeah, I think that if you have, you know, kind of exactly like that, if you can run this deck through a couple Magic Online leagues, like 2 to 3, I think that is enough. If you think the deck is better and you have enough time to do that, that's enough of a reason to play that deck over a worse deck. If you just simply know that deck is better. Now, if there is also the sliding scale that Michael talked about, I think is a perfect answer. How much better is this deck than the other one? And how much worse do you think you're going to play it if you don't have the time, or even if you do have the time? And that's kind of how you have to dictate the answer to the question. So, this week, we do have a card of the week. So every week on the show, when we can, we like to give out some magical cards. This week, we're going to give out some BOMAC Couriers. So, fun fact, this was one of the most surprising cards from our Pro Tour testing. It is one of the reasons that we had black-red aggro instead of three-color aggro in our gauntlet testing for the Pro Tour. And I think every single person who saw BOMAC Courier in play before they played with it were like, oh, this deck is bad. Why are you doing this? And then played with the card and were like, oh, this card is great. Yeah. This deck is great. I'm great.
it's a weird card in that it's very narrow in the kinds of decks that it will be good in, obviously. It's kind of decks that are mostly in the market for a Raging Goblin, but want a little bit more out of it, right? And if it's a deck where you could conceivably say Raging Goblin fits into my game plan, even if it's not a powerful card, Bomat Courier really is a pretty big upgrade there and can really, like, turn lead into gold for you a lot of times. It's a much more powerful card than it reads.
It's very much like, it's just a match made in heaven with Smuggler's Copter, right? Because, like, the same kind of cards that incentivize you to play Smuggler's Copter, like Scrap Heap Scrounger and Fiery Temper, are right. coincidentally great with Bomat Couriers, and top-decked Bomat Couriers can, they can, like, cycle if it's a top deck where you're empty-handed, because yeah. it gets the card on attacking. They can also just crew Smuggler's Copter. So it's, like, one of those cards that's kind of... And I guess these decks are playing Key to the City most of the time as well, so you can do some sneaky things with, you know, trying to get extra cards under it that way in a certain kind of game. It's just a card that, like, has a lot of... It just has enough text that is all mostly positive that it, like... It's, like, a lot better than you think, but it's, like, better at every stage of the game than you would think it would be.
Yeah, and somehow, like, if it just attacks a couple of times and then all of a sudden you have the opportunity to discard a card and draw three, that's a lot like Ancestral Recall, and, like, that's pretty powerful.
If you're not playing against Liliana specifically, I've had these cards absolutely destroy me once or twice where, like, you wouldn't think that Bomat Courier into Bomat Courier, Inventor's Apprentice, is, or, you know, whatever, is a strong draw until it happens to you, and then you're just kind of like, well, my opponent's going to get to draw, like, six extra cards in this game because I don't have a early blocker. That's awkward.
Yeah. So before we get too far in this, we haven't said who won it. So we're gonna send a playset out of these to Ben Williams. So Ben, I don't know if Ben plays aggro decks. I typically see him.
He does now.
I see him tweeting about different decks a lot. But yeah, go. We're gonna send you a playset of these, Ben, and you just have to be a patron of $3 or more to be eligible for this reward. And we also, when we get to our next Patreon goal, we'll be doing this every week. So go to patreon.com/ccmtg to see what's going on. The reason I brought this card up is because there's, like, a huge spike in aggro decks in Standard right now. We talked about this before. We have a rotating format. And one of the decks that's become really popular is a deck that a lot of our listeners were saying they thought was Tier 1 for a while. That wasn't showing up in, like, SCG stuff, but it's become one of the more dominant decks on MTGO, and that is that Black-Red aggro deck that pretty close to what we were testing for the Pro Tour.
Yeah, I think the deck is pretty good. I also think when there's a deck that plays just games faster, if its results are mostly 5-0 leagues and not PTQs, this is just a general note, but I would be a little bit wary of translating online success into paper success. I think this happens in every format to some extent, but I think just generally if you look at the 5-0s, they lean slightly more towards more aggressive strategies than, like, GP results would.
Right, because you can make it up in volume.
Yeah, exactly.
If you can play three leagues in the time that it takes me to play one, like,
my control deck has to be.
They did have three of them 5-1 the standard PTQ, though.
Yeah, so, no, I'm not saying this deck is bad. I'm just saying, like, if the percentages get crazy...
Sure.
I think aggro decks have a tendency on Magic Online to get sort of exaggerated numbers.
Yeah. I'm very interested by this deck. I think that it has everything it needs to be successful.
It's funny looking at this how, I mean, we basically played the same deck.
Yeah, we...
I mean, you're probably, like, three cards off
yeah,
of this.
Yeah, I mean, I think we had, like, some number of Fleetwill Cruisers. I think we went all the way down to one Fleetwill Cruiser. We didn't have Bloodhall Priest. We had something else in that slot, but, like, almost the exact same deck. Well,
I mean, it's a pretty similar role, really. But it's powerful. Like, the whole kind of madness thing, it doesn't maybe quite sink in until you've played a couple of games. But anytime you discard a card that you're getting to cast,
yeah,
your loot was free. So, like, cards like Bomat Courier, Key to the City, Smuggler's Copter get a lot better when you're
we had games where we were like, at the end of my turn, sacrifice my Bomat Courier, discard Fiery Temper.
Well, or, you know, hold priority, sacrifice my other Bomat Courier.
Oh, yeah, that's the yum-yums right there.
Yeah. I think actually Blood Hall Priest was kind of our only miss. We were playing, I think, some combination of like Harness Lightnings and Incendiary Flows.
I don't think we were playing
Fleet
Wheel Cruiser mainly.
We were playing Fleet Wheel Cruiser and some number of the Pump Your Artifact Dude's guy.
Yeah, sure.
That could crew Fleet Wheel Cruiser because he was a 3/2.
Sure.
But I think just looking at it's just about like this deck has a surprising amount of synergy for a deck that can also just sort of do the Mardu vehicles thing and just like there are certain draws where like if they're on the play, it's just going to be really hard to beat.
Yep.
I can imagine all kinds of things like involving some combination of Lightning Axe and Fiery Tempers where they're just going to have a hand where you're like, yeah, I mean, oh well.
Yeah, whatever. Both teams played hard.
Yeah, I'm dead on turn 5 and I don't have any creatures in play and, you know. Unlicensed Disintegration is just that kind of card, right? Like, when you're getting your teeth kicked in and they're like, oh yeah, by the way, bolt you and kill your creature, you're like, eh.
Yeah, it feels like getting Blightninged a lot.
If you're behind already, you basically just can't come back from an Unlicensed Disintegration.
Yep.
Yeah. So, Searing Blaze.
What do you guys think of it? I mean, does this mean that it's possible that control decks can, you know, wedge their way in again? Black, green, Delirium could wedge its way back in again because these decks are getting more popular?
I think.
And also, you know, this is coming right before a new set comes out, so that could make aggro deck even better again.
My understanding, looking at, like, the online metagame, I haven't played a lot of Standard recently, but looking at it a little bit, is that the black-green decks are a little more aggressively slanted now than they were before.
Yeah.
Sort of taking a cue from both, I think, Brad Nelson and Todd Anderson played aggressively slanted ones at the Players' Championship, so it looks like the format in general is kind of leaning that way, and it makes sense because I think getting involved in a mid-range game with Aetherworks Marvel just isn't...
It's a sucker's
it's
gambit.
Not a fight you want to fight. Like, yep. It just doesn't go well for you.
Absolutely. Well, so we're not going to do power rankings this week. We're going to go right into our training grounds. We kind of told you what it was last week, so we're going to talk about goals, how we feel about them, 2017 a little bit specifically. But let's get right into this. So... how important are goals to you, Casey?
They're extremely important. They let you track what you're doing and, like, what you've accomplished. And it just gives you something to fight for. If you don't have a specific goal in mind with everything that you're doing, it's very easy to become listless and not really care about the results of what you're trying to accomplish.
How do you try and avoid that? Do you set very specific goals?
Yeah, I think that if you are going to set goals, they should be as specific as possible and also as process-based as possible. That way you can avoid the pitfalls of either setting too vague of a goal or setting kind of a goal that you have no control over.
Michael, what about you? How important are goals to you?
Well, I liked what Casey said in that I think, like, it's you can work really hard without a goal, but goals help you work
smarter
in a better direction. Like,
yeah.
if we're going to say I'm putting out, you know, this is my input in terms of this is how much Magic I'm going to play, right? And it's like X amount of hours, but it sort of spreads out versus if it goes in a straight line, right? So, like, obviously you can't just always linearly get to every goal, but, like, you're a lot more likely... If you're aimless, it's really hard to hit the target.
Yeah.
Right. If you're gonna shoot darts blindfolded, you're probably not gonna be very good.
Yeah. That's exactly how I feel about it. Like, it would be really hard to convince me that without goals, like, you're achieving anything. Like, what you have nothing you're really working for.
Well, you can sort of volume your way into getting better at things.
Yeah.
But
you can have success without goals, but it's much harder to. Have because you like what does success mean if you didn't set a goal,
right? I mean, you'll just slowly get better probably from continuing to try, but I think you can be more realistic about what's working for you and what's not if you are good about setting goals, sort of figure out how you work best. I mean, that's really what you're looking for, right? The ability to, I mean, ideally work smart and hard,
yeah,
and make as much progress in as short amount of time as possible.
Yeah, I think this is exactly... I think we're kind of all on the same page here. So, with that being said, Michael, how high do you like to set your goals? Like, I think you both kind of talked a little bit about being process-oriented in your goals and things like that. So, that can mean very different things than some team might expect as far as like how high goals you set for yourself.
Well, I think it's sort of sixes really in terms of how you think about this, but like obviously you want to do well, but it's like if I set a goal of really playing, not just playing to play, but trying to learn and play like at least two or three leagues a day with a deck for whatever. Basically, what my real goal is when I'm going into a large tournament, I never want to feel like I just threw my hands up in the air and said, whatever. I want to feel like I tried some things, I mean, and that I have a reason to believe I can do well. That is in terms of being like, and how I'm going to get there, you know, we can work on that over time, can see what works best, but I never want to go into a tournament I care about and think, oh man, I hope this goes well.
What are you, Casey? Do you have a standard in what you want your goals to be?
Yeah, it should be a little bit of a carrot at the end of the stick where it should be something that you are going to have to work for, not something you're just going to slide into, but it also has to be something that you can eventually reach, because otherwise it's just going to say, oh, this is undoable and I'm going to give up. You know, that's just sort of human nature. So there's a kind of a sweet spot between difficult and impossible that you have to really make sure that you're hitting if you're setting it to be a goal.
So talking about sliding into a goal where, like, maybe you didn't really earn it just happened. That's what I like about trying to set goals that are related to how I feel or how I prepare rather than how I do.
I think this is the difference between developing a habit and setting a goal, right? Like, refilling my ice tray is a habit that I developed, right?
Sure.
Like, I'm not going to even mention the number of times I go into somebody's house and I'm like, hey, can I get some ice? And they're like, yeah, it should be in the ice tray. I'm like, well, your ice tray is empty, so, you know, you should fix that. And it bugs me when I don't have ice, right? So I refilled my ice tray. That's not a goal I set for myself. That's a habit that I developed, which I think is different. I guess you could have your goal to be to develop a certain habit.
Sure.
But that's a little bit different, whereas, like...
Well, no, because a goal should be something measurable and something that right. You can say that you do. Otherwise, it's just sort of a vague...
So, but I like preparation goals better than success goals, because this is what I was trying to get into, but, like, Casey's talking about being able to slide in your... Sometimes you'll overachieve relative to your level of preparation.
Yes.
And sometimes you'll underachieve relative to your level of preparation. So basically just like on the sample size of a single event,
right.
It is insane to feel better or worse about yourself based on your finish.
Yeah, that's exactly the next point that's on the show notes here is understanding your goals and how they work out versus your actual self-worth. Like how you feel about yourself because of those goals. You know, I didn't do anything in Magic in 2016. And I certainly don't define myself by the accomplishments that I had in this year of Magic for me. And I think that there are people who take that a little too far.
So I guess I'm okay if it's something really important to you. I'm okay staking a lot of how you feel about yourself and that kind of thing. But what I want it to be is I want it to be like an effort thing and okay, so this didn't work out for me last time. Why didn't it? I want data that allows me to improve my preparation process. I don't want data that's like, well, you did good at this event, so clearly your prep was good when you know it wasn't.
Right. You don't want your self-worth to be determined by which way the wind is blowing.
That's exactly it, right? Like, so if I'm, you know, if I want to be the world's best sailor, right, I'm sure that like, well, it's going to be a lot easier on the days the wind is blowing in the direction I'm trying to sail. So Magic is kind of like that sometimes. Sometimes things just go your way, and sometimes they really don't. But, like, what I want to say is I didn't forget to, you know, patch the holes in my sailboat before I got on the water.
Right. You took every reasonable measure
right.
to become the best sailor you could be.
Yeah.
So what do you want for yourself in 2017 as far as what kind of goals do you want to set?
It's such a tough question. I like the idea of trying to never feel underprepared, because that's something that I actively have control over, and something that obviously helps your tournament finishes too. Like, you're gonna do better if you feel good about your preparation. But beyond that, I guess my goal would be to not let a situation get to me. Like, I don't want this, like, the scale of event I'm playing in or how weird or bad a match was. I want to get better at staying level.
Staying neutral?
Staying level during events. And I think that playing a lot of games, just playing a lot of Magic, helps with that. But it's something that I want to work on.
Casey? That's good. Sorry, excuse me. So, for me, I want to be more serious about being consistent in my dedication to Magic. Right now, it's been very up and down. One week, you know, I'm playing a ton of Magic. Next week, I'm not. And that's not really that helpful to me. So I'm going to be setting a goal to play 8 to 10 hours of meaningful Magic every week.
I like that you use the word meaningful. Why is that important?
So, like, playing Wednesday night tournaments at Oasis, they're fun. They take a few hours, but it's mostly just hanging out with my friends. You know, we're BSing, we're playing Magic, we're eating pizza, whatever. That's not really, I'm not getting anything out of that as a Magic player. That's for my personal enjoyment.
I feel the exact opposite. I feel like Wednesday nights equate to, like, a competitive league on MTGO.
I think that the competition is similar, but I'm saying more, so in that 4 hours that you're there, you're going to play Magic for an hour, right?
But that's how long you play a competitive league for.
Right, but I'm saying, like, I can't play 8 Wednesday night tournaments in a week.
I see.
But I'm saying I want to get, like, 8 to 10 actual meaningful hours of Magic in a week. Not just be playing Magic or being around Magic,
I see.
But actually getting something out of it.
I think the mindset is kind of different, too. Like, I know when I'm playing events that are kind of set, I'm more interested in winning them sometimes than I am in learning.
Yeah.
And, like, Magic Online Leagues are really good because it's easy to, like, track your win percentage, you know, just look through your game history or whatever, and I like being able to sort of seeing, like, the wins and losses stack up like that gives you a lot of time to sort of reflect on, like, okay, so I'm pretty sure I lost this match because I'm stupid.
Yeah.
Pretty sure I shouldn't have lost that match or I shouldn't have won. And I like how it just gives you good tools for being more analytical about it.
Sure.
Yeah.
So I want to increase my win percentage in 2017. I want to increase my paper win percentage. I'm going to track that. I know what I'm at right now. I want that to go up, get really, like, the pros are like 70 percenters, and I'm really close, so that's where I want to get. And then I want to track and improve my ELO rating on Magic Online, similar to the way that I tracked and did that in paper back when it was there. And that's kind of my goal. I want to just make meaningful pushes forward in those aspects of Magic, because kind of like it's analytical, right? I just want to apply more analytics to Magic in that sense.
Sure. Like that's a different goal than the type that I like to set because it is very results-based rather than trying to say I'm going to work on these things to improve my win percentage.
That's how I have to do it, right?
But so
how I execute my goal can be process-based.
So what about
I think that the vagueness of that just is something that I don't like to do.
Sure.
It doesn't make it wrong. It's just not how I like to do it.
So what I do like, though, is that when you say things like, I want to increase my ELO rating, I mean, it's not deciding how you're going to get better enough to do that, but what it is doing is it's not like saying, I want to play this PTQ on Magic Online this week and win it. Right?
Right.
It's like a long-term kind of achievable goal. It's like something that you can say, I'm going to set out to do this, and how exactly you get there isn't really included in the goal. But
right.
But you're not, like,
and
putting
I wouldn't
a
do
lot
that,
of...
Because I think that there's a lot of things that will, one, have to go right, and two, I'll have to learn where I'm making mistakes and then find solutions to those mistakes as I go along.
Right, but I like the idea of setting a goal that's about winning over a longer period.
Exactly,
because
that's
why I think,
wanted that goal.
Right, just like when you try to boil it down, there's too much variance in a single event. But, you know, if your win rate is 70% over all matches of Magic you played, like, you have to get a lot less lucky to do really well in a big event.
So what if the listener wants their goal this year to be, I want to win a game day this year? What would you say to that person?
Well, I would say that I have ideas for how I would start on that path, or how I would measure how likely that was to happen. And what I would also say is that, I mean, what, there are 4 game days in a year? There's one after...
Yeah, there's basically one for each set, and then, you know, most stores will run 2. Sometimes you'll get a Saturday and a Sunday opportunity, something like that.
Okay, yep. But okay, so let's just say you're going to play... I don't care if this is actually, but let's just say you're going to play 5, because you're going to play 5. This is what's happening. Because it's a nice round number. So I think rather than, like, your goal can be to win a game day, but what I would say might be a better goal is, like, I want to be the level of player who can play a game day and expect to win. Or expect to, you know what I mean? Like, if I'm doing well in other events... If I'm able to, like, win FNMs consistently and, you know, I take 2nd in 2 game days, I think, like, being realistic with yourself in the sense that, like, it's just a small number of events overall. Like, if you say I want to win an FNM, I think that's a fine goal, although ultimately 1 year, you know, mostly likely to get relatively quickly. But... When you're talking about a number of events where it's just the number, the total number isn't going to be that high, I worry a little bit about just variance getting in the way.
Yeah. And think about what you need to do to, like, where you feel like you're lacking, and identify the areas of opportunity, and, like I said, define what somebody who can win a game day is, and take the steps you need to take to become
that.
So
that's actually what I was going to say, too, is you should, if that's the goal you want to set for yourself, look around you and say, what is this person doing and how can I amplify that?
Who are the players I play locally who win these things? Okay. Are they better than me? You know, if they've won a bunch of these and you've never won one, perhaps.
And I don't want to say that setting a goal to win a set event is, like, a terrible thing. It's just not something that you can put your self-worth into because it's Magic.
Well, right.
It's just that you could, it's just making, like, single event based goals is just inherently going to be a lot of variance more than anything else.
That's true. It's also not that different than setting the goal to qualify for your first Pro Tour, though, which I think is a reasonable goal. So I certainly wouldn't want to deter somebody from saying, like, this is the next step that I think that I need to take in Magic. But once you have that goal set, I would just advise to you know, make a process to getting that done rather than just trying to go to 8 game days and trying to spike one. Because that's not the same thing as, like, improving and, like, setting a path for yourself to do it.
I would be happier with a goal that was, like, I would like to top 8 X percent of the PTQs I play, or something like that, or, like, I want to qualify for every RPTQ. Because I think that those kind of goals where just you get the variance spread out a little bit, I mean, obviously you have to work on a plan for how you're going to do this, but, like, I like those kind of goals better because you're not leaving things up to chance so much.
Yeah, and also trying to be something as, like, measurable as possible too. Like, say I want to top 8, a certain percentage. That's something where you can say, okay, I'm trying to top 8 3/4, and right now I'm top 8 about half. What are the people that are top 8 more than me doing? Is it deck selection? Whatever. Trying to get something specific that you can work towards is a lot more productive than just saying saying you want to qualify for the Pro Tour is a great goal, but there's a lot of ways to skin that cat. So you just have to think about, like, what you're going to do to get there.
Yeah, and I think that's...
And make sure you just make yourself a plan.
Yeah, I think that building out a process for yourself and then finding the flaws in your process and then correcting those and doing that again and again and again, it's just going to be the thing that gets you to that goal, whatever that goal may be, whether it's qualifying for a Pro Tour, whether it's winning a game day Whether it's top eighting a certain number of events, whether it's increasing your win percentage, whether it's getting silver, you know, whatever your goal is, you just have to kind of decide what that looks like, and then try to improve what that looks like too. Because a goal, like, it's very likely that your first draft of, like, how I'm going to do this isn't correct. The first time that I went to a PTQ, I didn't do the best job that I could do preparing for that PTQ.
Yeah, not close, right?
And if I had done the same thing every single time, I would have never won a PTQ.
But it's also an unreasonable expectation of yourself.
It
to
is.
Like, right? It's not like this is a personal failing. It's like if you've never done something before, it's pretty hard to just, like, you know. Very rarely are you great at something when you don't even know what you're doing.
That's true, but there's a lot of Magic players that are like, oh, Magic sucks. Like, everybody's a bunch of net deckers, and, like, you know, I can't win when they're all net decking.
I mean, I would just remove that word from your vocabulary.
So would I. But, like, what I'm saying is I think that it's important to note that you're not trying to improve on your own process when you're thinking like that. So it's about learning from that and trying to do what you can to improve. Even if you don't want to go and copy somebody's deck list, you need to get better. If you're not winning, you obviously need to get better at deck building. And that can be a goal for yourself, right? So there's lots of things that you can do. I think that learning to be process-oriented rather than results-oriented is going to be very helpful for achieving all of those things that you want to do in the next year in Magic.
It's just not a very good game for people who want to be results-oriented.
Yeah, it'd be really frustrating.
Like, it's just...
Right, because, like,
there are a lot of other better hobbies you could have for that.
Right, and assuming that your opponent is also good, right? You're playing, the higher your competition gets when you're playing Grand Prix and Pro Tours, you play against mostly people that are good at Magic. So, assuming that they're about as good as you are, maybe some are a little better, some are a little worse, you're trying to get better at winning coin flips, which you can do in Magic to some extent, but you're never going to consistently wipe the floor with Grand Prix. You're never going to consistently wipe the floor with Pro Tours. It just doesn't happen. They're going to have good streaks and bad streaks, and that's Magic.
Well, and just the edges are smaller, and the way you get them is generally through, you know, preparation, right? It's you control the things you have control over.
Right. You can be the best prepared player in the room, but that's going to correlate to match wins, but it's not a 1-to-1 correlation.
Right, right. There's no prize for being the best prepared, but...
Right. There's no Miss Congeniality award. There's no most prepared award. None of that.
I'm
they stopped
doing those.
I'm
disappointed by that. Yeah. They should bring out some extra trophies.
That's going to be it for the training grounds this week. You know, I'm excited for 2017. I hope that... I mean, it's just a few days away, and I hope that Magic is a great year for all of us that year. And, I mean, if it's as good a year for, you know, the people that I surround myself with as it was, like, 2016, it'd be a cool year. So, where can people find you guys?
You can find me on Facebook at Casey Tuna Bloodworth or on Twitter at CC Bloodthirst.
You can find me on Facebook, Michael Hinderocker, or you can find me on Twitter at MagicMikeMTG.
We are 58% of the way to our next goal on Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/CCMTG. At our next goal, we will make the tokens for the podcast and get those sent out, and then we'll be able to give those to future patrons as well. You know, we're excited for that. It's something that people have asked for. When I asked, like, hey, like, we don't know if we really want to do this, we're like, no, we really want it, so we're going to do it. We'll also make Card of the Week a thing every single week. More segments like the one we did today. I really enjoyed just talking about the card and then the deck that it fits in, and I am excited to do that every week. And being able to give those cards out every week is something that we really want to be able to do, and we're 58% of the way there. So we're more than halfway there, guys. So go to patreon.com/CCMTG to help us reach our next goal. You can join the conversation every week by going to the Facebook group. It's called Constructive Criticism Family. You can just ask for an invite, ask for an ad, and I'll do that for you. You can also find our other show at limited time only on iTunes. It's on the same thread as this one for most of you. You can also find it on MTGcast. You can listen to this podcast every week on mtgcast.com and constructivecriticism.com and youtube.com now, thanks to one of our listeners. He'll be posting that for us every week. You can also check out the YouTube channel. It's got testing videos with me and Matt, deck text with me and Michael, a weekly blog, and the more stuff that comes from Patreon, the more stuff we'll be able to do. You know, Casey's got a suit in his closet he's ready to dust off to do all kinds of things with, and he's really excited about that. So just check out the YouTube channel and go subscribe. We would really appreciate it. Yeah, you can join the clan by going on MTGO and messaging me at Spencer13Dev or Quentin at Earthstripe. That's URTHSTRYPE. Hashtag would that be good is our final segment of the show. You can tweet hashtag would that be good, anything you want, and supposedly we'll read it. So
what's that supposed to mean?
I'm just saying, like, I don't know that I would. I mean, we've had
it's more of
a long time ago, right? Like there are bots that used our hashtag that we didn't read their tweets.
Sure.
So, Casey, why don't you read the first one?
All right. It's a very nearly almost Christmas miracle. The 1740 bus showed up at 1740 for the first time in 3 weeks. Hashtag 239 bus times. Hashtag would that be good? It's Marianne McDonald. She has a constant struggle with this bus, so I'm glad it showed up for you on time for once.
Yeah, and that's at @marzipan_civil.
Yeah.
Using hashtag would that be good to shoehorn topic discussions onto the show. That's at Agent of Blight, which is Joshua Collier. Yeah, so people used to do this all the time. We don't have a problem with it. You know, it's also a time where you get, like, really raw reactions.
Yeah, because we're just going to read it and talk about it.
Yeah, because we're just going to read it and talk about it. So sometimes, like, you know, like, Casey will say something about, you know, not true about Cabal Therapy when you tweet about that, so.
What did I say about it?
That it's never made a game of Magic better.
Yeah, that's true. It's actually a miserable card. It's like Mind Twist. It's just not fun to play with or against.
It is almost uniquely miserable when you're pulling out as a like Kaskataxian probe and then starts tapping their lands. You're just like, oh, no, not this.
I don't know what's about to happen, but I know you do.
They have that young pyromancer. They have that young pyromancer, and you're just like, oh.
Playing Paper Magic 5 days straight while my wife and kids are out of town. Hashtag out the good. Hashtag party. Hashtag MTG dad. That's at Ryan Kendall. 85, and yeah, that sounds awesome to me. I used to do that all the time. Those were the days.
Yeah, that's sweet, Ryan. You know, get it in there. They're gonna like take that time back out of you when they get back, right? Like you're still gonna have to spend the same number of hours per day on your kids and stuff that you normally would. You're just gonna have to do it all at once when they get back. So get that in there when you can.
next up, we have at Sov Mason. We have buying Legacy Elves on MTGO. Hashtag would that be good? Yeah, so I got a question from Mason. He was like, hey, like, I really want to buy the stack. Do you think it's a waste of money on MTGO? And I was like, do you want it? Do you have the money for it? Will you play with it? If the answer to all those questions was yes, go for it. And I think that I have gotten a lot of questions about, like, Magic purchases recently, and I just feel like I'm the wrong person to answer the question, because, like,
yeah,
I just, like, if I want Magic cards and I think I'm going to play with them, I just buy them. With no regard for human life.
I will tell you this. I don't know how good I am at Magic, but I'm a lot better at Magic than I am at budgeting.
Yeah.
So don't ask me questions like that.
Yeah.
Because that sounds mostly great.
Yeah.
Every time somebody asks me, should I buy this card?
Do you already have it? Because if you already have it, don't buy it again.
Yeah, especially on MTGO.
Unless you want the second copy, just in case.
Yeah, in case you lose the first one.
Yeah. On MTGO?
Yeah.
Things happen.
I don't know what happened to this deck.
I mean, I do have, like, so you say that jokingly, but I'm pretty sure.
But you have, like, 7 different copies of certain cards.
Oh, I'm pretty sure I have, like, over 50 negates and probably, like, 23 ponders. So, you know.
How is that possible?
I mean, you've done way sweeter drafts than me.
Because, well, no, the ponders aren't from drafting. They're from buying ponder.
Oh.
Because you copy a deck list.
Yeah, because I buy it through card hoarder every time. I never actually, like,
check
trade with bots.
Sure.
Yeah, so I just don't check what commons and uncommons I have. So, I don't know. At one point, I had, like, 13 different pyroclasms, and it was interesting.
Yeah. It's funny. If you look at my collection, you can definitely tell what sets I've drafted a lot. Because I have, like, some ungodly number of Benefic Infiltrators and,
sure,
like, a bunch of cards like that where it's like, who needs 19 of these?
Yeah, so I've definitely been there before, but there's also just, like, certain cards.
That sounds great.
There are certain cards that are so bad you can't even sell them for, you know,
right, exactly,
a 1/1,000,000th of a penny or whatever.
I'm just going to own these Benefic Infiltrators for the rest of my life. There's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah, I was contemplating, like, what is the worst card that I could, you know, just, like, try to buy as many copies of as possible for comedic value. But then everything costs at least a cent, which feels like a ripoff, frankly.
Yeah. Like, how many abandoned hopes does it take to become funny, right? And
like,
is it
more than
it?
A dollar's worth? So
I might buy all the golden grenades now.
Well, yeah, but those probably cost like 5 cents. That's going to be expensive.
You think so? I hope not.
I think that card sees popper play.
That's true. It does.
Yeah, it has to be something really, really abysmal. But you know, you could probably own all of the tassel domiciliaries you wanted to.
You could maybe someday own all the tassel domiciliaries.
Could work on it. That's a new
hashtag
goal.
Hashtag life goals.
Man, that's not even a life goal. It's a goal for 2017.
Hashtag 2017 goals.
Yeah.
My goal is to not catch your grenade in 2017.
Yeah, or...
Seems mostly achievable.
Yeah. Continue my grenade-free streak.
27 years in Scotland.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you guys all next week.
Peace.
See you guys.
Magic.